This morning, I want to talk to you about something that's near and dear to my heart, and it's been something where preparing this, I found it's actually been really hard for me to prepare because it matters so much to me. And so my prayer this morning is that this is not something that I get out of the way, that this is my time to take a rant, but that this is something that the Holy Spirit speaks to your heart about, because I think it is something very important, something we see in Scripture. And it comes down to, what does it mean to follow Jesus? That's what we've been talking about this series. Following Jesus, being a Christian, is not putting the bumper sticker on your car, right? It's not putting the little fish thing on your car, right? It's not wearing the cross necklace. That's not what being a Christian's about. It's not identifying with a culture. It's all about following Jesus. I really like how John Mark Comer puts this. There's a great book he wrote called Practicing the Way. I recommend it to everyone. And when you read Practicing the Way, he says, look, following Jesus is pretty simple. You have to be with him, spend time with him. You have to become like him. He's our teacher. He's our model. We want to become like him. And then you want to do the things he did. You want to emulate. And so all this comes down to putting our faith in action. You know, if you believe something, if you actually believe something, you'll act on it. I've said before, if I told you, I've hit $1 million in this building, and you said, oh, I believe you, but you're not looking for it, you don't believe me. If you believe that I hit $1 million in this building, you'd be like, all right, go, right? So, obviously, I haven't. You're wise to doubt me in this case. But if we actually believe that Jesus has good things for us, if we follow him, if we become like him, if we do what he does, then we'll actually put those things into practice. And one of the things that John Mark Comer talks about is rule of life. It's something where it's a collection of spiritual practices that kind of define how we do this, the rhythms of life that imitate Jesus, like the apostles did. But here's the thing. These spiritual disciplines aren't the point. We can make spiritual disciplines the focus of, if I got to do this and do this and do this, and this is the bigger point. All the spiritual disciplines are help us to follow Jesus. They're all helpful tools in the toolbox. Have you ever tried to remove a screw with like pliers? Like, you could probably do it. Is that the right tool for the job? The thing is, all these different spiritual practices are tools in the toolbox. The tools aren't the point. You're trying to do something. That's the point. But having the right tool is going to help, right? So we've talked about a bunch of tools. We've talked about Sabbath, about the importance of following Jesus' example in setting aside time to rest and to spend time with God. Example of creation, God rests on the seventh day. If God's going to rest, you can take a day off too. We talked about fasting, about how we put our physical needs on hold for a spiritual benefit, right? We focus on God and give him that time and that energy that we would spend with food. And that's something that's a tool in the toolbox. We don't have to always do that. We don't have to do that religiously, right? But sometimes that's a useful tool. We talked about service. That's a great way to put our faith into practice and to grow and to do the things that Jesus did. And Marissa talked about last week, solitude, which for some of us, we're like, yeah, that sounds great. For others of us, I have to be by myself and turn off the radio and the social media. And I don't know if I like that. I got to practice a little bit of solitude this week. Marissa went off to the retreat, and so it's a good opportunity for me to practice what she was preaching. And today we're talking about community. And it's funny because solitude and community are kind of opposites, right? Again, these are tools in the toolbox. You don't use all the tools all at the same time. You have a rhythm. You have times when you use one, times when you use the other. And so sometimes we're going to move towards solitude, and sometimes we're going to move towards community. And some spiritual disciplines feel easier to us than others, right? It's easy to stay in our comfort zone. There's always a couple of disciplines that we're like, yeah, I'm grooving with that. And a couple that are, I don't know. But our greatest opportunities to get closer to Jesus, to grow to become more like him, to do the awesome work of the kingdom, come when we stretch ourselves. Though it's best if we all stretch ourselves a little bit of a time. We're not trying to say you have to do all of it all just at maximum level right away. But we want to kind of experiment step by step and get a little bit into some areas that maybe we haven't had as much experience with. So if you're introverted, you might have found a lot of appeal in the practice of solitude. That might sound really good to you. And if you're extroverted, you say, yeah, practicing community is more my speed. But here's the thing. It's tools in the toolbox are useful in different situations. It's not about who you are. If you're extroverted, it's really important to get away by yourself and be with God. There's a huge benefit to that. You'll see something new from God. And if you're introverted, there's a lot of ways to participate in community that don't require you to pretend to be anything you're not. So I'm not saying you ought to become extroverts this morning, but there is something that Jesus has. Jesus used all of these tools. He often pulls away by himself, but then he frequently is engaging in community. In fact, John, the gospel writer, has this beautiful poetic introduction about Jesus coming from heaven and becoming a man. He goes off and is tempted, and then he goes to a wedding and like turns water into wine. Okay. Apparently Jesus, the community was important to Jesus. You know, he's always eating with like tax collectors, and he also eats with Pharisees. Sometimes we forget that we're like, oh, he ate with all those bad people and was always mean to the Pharisees, but he actually ate in a lot of Pharisees' homes and had really interesting conversations with them. You know, sharing a meal recognizes our shared humanity. It's something that's really important. That's where the deep conversations often happen. And then Jesus built this community of disciples, and then he made them work together, sent them out two by two. I often wondered, was that random? Did he just like, do you let them sort it out, or did he like, oh, you two need to work together, you'll learn something? I always wonder. So community is something that Jesus engaged in. Why is this important? Well, I want to first acknowledge that we are in a hyper-individualistic culture. Our culture is not set up around community the same way that Jesus' culture was. You know, there's some good things about individualistic culture. It's not all bad. But we also have to recognize if we're going to be more like Jesus, we have to be a little bit more open to a different way of thinking. Well, we've also got a lot of baggage around community, I think for most of us at least. Most of us have been deeply hurt by somebody. Most of us have trusted someone and had it go bad, or felt rejected and on the outside. There's, you know, some really good moments in my life in community and some really sad moments. There's some times when good friends have moved away, and, you know, that is what it is. It happens, right? The other thing that happens in our culture is, I don't want to call anyone out. I'm not calling anyone specifically. I think this applies to all of us. We're all missing some basic social skills. I'm talking about me too. I don't know what it is about where we live now and the time. I think social media has a huge effect on our ability to have normal social relations with people. I think the fact that we have way too much insight into what's going on the whole world over puts us on in a different mindset. I think we've got so much media that colors our perception of how people, what's normal. Like I realized at one point that if I kept on watching sitcoms, I'd have a really warped idea of what real people are like, you know. But what's funny is people start acting like the people in the sitcoms, and then you're like, I don't know if this is, which was the chicken and what's the egg. And I could go into this for a while, but we gotta get a move on. But we're missing some stuff. We need to practice some stuff. That's one of the reasons we have so much of a challenge with the concept of community in our culture. Is a lot of us are just missing a lot of the baseline for it. And so just a thing to consider, that's something to say, you know, it's okay to not know things. It's okay to not have some skills and to say, but I can work on that, right? That's what we're doing. So is community that important that you need to work on some social skills, that I need to work on some social skills? Well, let's look at, let's just start at the beginning of the Bible and let's see. So Genesis, God creates the world, right? Day one, God says, saw the light, it was very good. Day two, God saw that it was good. Day three, saw that it was good. Day four, God saw that it was good, right? But then on day seven, creates the world. And then he's looking at Adam in the garden. And he says, wait a second. It is not good. It's good. It's good. Everything's good. God's making this world and it's great. Oh, that's not good. Something's important here. Genesis is trying to set us up for this expectation that, look at God doing all this great stuff. And then God says, wait, I missed a spot. Right? This is important. What's not good? It's not good for man to be alone. And we like to make this about, well, you know, he needed a wife. He was very sad as a single person. It's not about that. It's not about being single. It's about we need each other. We need a community. You know, God himself is a community. The Father, Son, the Holy Spirit. He's one, but he's also a community in and of himself. So when he makes us in his image, he's making us to be part of a community with him. Fast forward to Jesus. Jesus calls us out. When we see the word church in the Bible, the Greek word is ekklesia, which means the assembly of the called out ones. You have a big announcement to make in your city. You blow a trumpet. You call everybody out of their houses. They come in the street and they gather, right? That's the ekklesia. Well, that's what he's done. He's called us out. He said, hey, come follow me. And we've answered the call. We've gathered here today. We are one body with him. I could read so many verses on this, but I think the classic is in 1 Corinthians 12. For just as the body is one and yet has many members, and all of the members of the body, though many, are one body, so too is Christ. From the Spirit we are all baptized into one body. Whether Jews or Greeks, slaves or free, we were made to drink one spirit. So for, in fact, the body is not a single member, but many. We're not, I'm a Christian, and I'm doing my own thing, and it's cool, and I know God, and that's great. No, we're all part of one body. We're not the whole thing. We're one part. If the foot says, since I'm not a hand, I'm not part of the body, it does not lose its membership in the body because of that. If the ear says, since I'm not an eye, I'm not part of the body, it does not lose its membership in the body because of that. If the whole body were an eye, that would be really weird. Oh, I mean, what part would do the hearing? if the whole were an ear, what part would exercise the sense of smell? But as a matter of fact, God has placed each of the members in the body just as he decided. You have a place to belong. You have a specific role that he's created you specifically to fill. And so if they were all the same member, where would the body be? So now there are many members, but one body. The eye cannot say to the hand, I do not need you. Nor can the head say to the foot, I do not need you. And on the contrary, the weaker members, those members that seem to be weaker are essential. And that's something that I think it's important to remember, because we're not just any community. We're the body of Christ. And there's lots of communities where your value in community comes from your strength, comes from what you bring to the table. And Paul's saying, but the body of Christ is different. Because if you're weaker, you're also essential. Weaker doesn't mean less than. It doesn't mean worse. It means more delicate. It means more precious. And we need that. The thing is, in the church today, America especially, there's a lot of toes out there doing their own thing. But we can do more together. How much can we do as one body part? Not really much of anything. We have to have the whole body. You've all had your foot fall asleep, right? It goes numb. And a lot of us are kind of mostly sort of cut off from the body. We've gone numb. And here's the annoying thing. When we reconnect, there's some tingling. It's uncomfortable. I hate that part. But you know, you just got to get through it. There's nothing for it, right? We are different from other communities. The thing that brings us together is Jesus. It's not demographics. It's not an affinity for a particular fandom. It's not being from a specific place. It's Jew or Greek, slave or free. Community of Jesus breaks down all of those barriers and puts us all in one body. And that brings some difficulty. It's hard when we don't share as much in common. We have to lean into the one thing that we have in common, which is Jesus. And so many times in our communities, we tend to lean on the things that are familiar about other people. Oh, you came from this place. I grew up right next to there. Oh, you like this artist. Or you like this thing. You're into these movies. It's great to connect on these things. It's not wrong. But if we're not careful, we can sort ourselves with the people that are most like us and walk away from the people that are less like us, and then we're not being the body of Christ as he designed it. And so there's something special about our community in that we're trying to see Jesus and the other person. And it's great to have conversations, getting to know you, where you're from, what you do. All that stuff's fine. Those are basic questions that just start conversation. We want to remember that the goal is to get down a little bit deeper. So what is Jesus doing in your life? Because that's actually what we're going to build a relationship on. That's actually how the body is connected, is through Christ. And one more thing about community before I dig into how. Community supercharges all the other spiritual practices. It's easier to maintain a rhythm of Sabbath when you do it with other people. Proverbs says, as iron sharpens iron, so a person sharpens his friend. We need each other. When we do things together, when we practice the way together, when we follow Jesus together, we sharpen each other. We help each other out. It prevents us from getting stuck in an alternate reality of our own making. Have you noticed that? If you get isolated, get your little media bubble, everyone hates me, and I'm just going to go through life believing these things. And as soon as you actually get out and meet real people, you find your assumptions are challenged, and that's uncomfortable. But, in my book, that's better than getting stuck in a alternate reality, right? So what is community? What is this different community that's based around Jesus really look like? Well, when I moved out to Colorado, one of the thoughts that had captivated me, one of the things I said, I've got to figure this out, was this passage in Acts. And I've never been able to get over it. Because what happens is Jesus ascends, Peter preaches the gospel, 3,000 come to know Christ. And what are you going to do with 3,000 people? That's a lot of people. What happens next? Well, this is what it looked like. Well, they were devoting themselves to the apostles' teaching and to fellowship, to the breaking of bread, and to prayer. And reverential awe came over everyone, and many wonders and miraculous signs came about by the apostles. All who believed were together and held everything in common, and they began selling their property and possessions and distributing the proceeds to everyone as anyone had need. Every day they continued to gather together by common consent in the temple courts, breaking bread from house to house, sharing their food with the glad and humble hearts, praising God and having the goodwill of all the people. And the Lord was adding daily to their number those who were being saved. And I read that 2 decades ago, and I said, I want to see that. I want to be part of that community. Something I was longing for when I moved out here. And so some things happened, tried some different things. You know, community's hard. It's hard to maintain relationships with people. Even you think you've got the same values, and it turns out you don't. And so there's some stop and start. But I remember my roommate at the time also shared this vision. He shared this passion. He said, why don't we just do something really simple? Why don't we just start a fire pit in the backyard and invite people over and just see what happens? And I said, I'll make soup. Marissa came to the very first one, and every single one after. you know what happened out of that is we just started having conversations with people. We got to know people. We got to hear about their struggles. I said, hey, we're worshiping at Loveland Vineyard this Sunday. Do you want to come? Do you want to be part of the band? A bunch of them were musicians. We said, hey, come be part of the band. We'll put you on the schedule. We'll play music together. And people are coming here, and we say, you know what? This evening, we're going over to David's house. Going to just hang out down there and have some dinner. You're welcome to drive down with us. So people started coming to that. Said, you know, we have this prayer meeting. We just get together and pray for each other's needs. You want to come to that? And all of a sudden, I was seeing the same people 4 times a week. And cool stuff started happening. I knew that I had people that when I had a need, I could just go to and call up and say, hey, I need some help today. Can you show up and help me with this? So-and-so is moving. Can we help them move? Oh, I don't have an ice scraper. That's okay. You can use mine. We just started helping each other out. Someone's going through a rough time at work. Well, Marissa was. She had a terrible job. Abusive boss. We looked at her and said, so when are you going to quit? So she's like, what? When are you going to quit? So she came back the next Sunday. I remember we sat right there and she said, guys, guess what? I quit. High five. You know? And then another friend in this community got her a job. And that was wonderful. And then Amanda ran into Marissa out of nowhere. Marissa said, I'll get you a job at the same place. And she became part of the community. And it just grew and grew and grew. That was a wonderful time of our lives. That's when we started dating, which is always scary to do in a community. You know, at least in our culture, we feel like that's scary to do. What if things go bad? Well, then you should be adults about it. Be mature, right? It used to be everyone dated within their community. There was not any travel to other places, small towns, all that stuff, right? So it was normal. That was a really wonderful time of our life. And these things do kind of come in waves and seasons. And I think there's more that Jesus can do when we're together. So I kind of put that out there as that's what it can look like. I think we were just barely scratching the surface of Acts 2, but I think there's more there. I think that beautiful vision can still be ours. But here's the thing. We got to approach this a little bit differently, because a community of believers who are following Jesus together is not going to look like the organizations that we're familiar with. It's not a military. There's not a rank, orders, top down, right? It's not even a company, which is a little bit of a softer version of that. You got the bosses, you got the peons. They get compensated for their services, you know. We're not a company. We're not even a very good nonprofit organization sometimes. We're not like a loose confederation of independent groups. This is not the UN, you know. It's not an economy of producers and consumers. It's not some of us make the things the other people consume. That's not what it's here for. You didn't come here to be an audience for me. That's something I'm always aware of, right? We come here to worship Jesus together, to focus on him. And so we should be a community that's built on a different principle. A community that's built on love and grace. What is love and grace? Those are wonderful church words. Aren't those wonderful Bible words? Don't we love and grace? I love them. What does that really mean? One thing that in all these different kind of experiments with community I've found is an important principle. Something I'm going to call non-transactional reciprocity. You say, wow, that's a big word. See, yes, yeah, that's a big phrase. That's a mouthful. That's what Marissa said last night. Wow, say it 5 times fast. So here's the thing. Jesus says some things. He says, give to everyone who asks you, and if anyone takes what belongs to you, do not demand it back. Okay, so we're going to be very, very open and giving. And then Paul comes around and says, for even when we were with you, we gave you this rule. The one who's unwilling to work shall not eat. Aren't we giving things? The thing is, Paul's talking to a very specific church context, right? He's saying, you've got people who are sort of got one foot in your community but aren't participating, right? Jesus says, love your enemies. Do good to them. Lend to them without expecting to get anything back. That's great. But then Paul goes back and says, okay, but if you're in church, everyone's got a gift. You should all have an opportunity to use your gift. We should all be working together, right? So there's a couple of like tensions that we have to navigate here. And the thing I know is that transactional relationships are not healthy. There is a place for transactional relationships out in the world. You have a contract, that's a transactional relationship. You have a transactional relationship with your boss. He tells you what to do, you do it, you get paid, right? And that's okay. But the church is not that kind of organization. We don't work that way. Jesus never engages in transactionality. And it's a good thing, too, because he's given us everything. He's died on the cross for sins to heal us, to give us a new life with him. So we could never repay him. And he doesn't ask us to, because it's not about transactionality, right? He doesn't feed the 5,000 and say, it's okay, you can Venmo me later. Transactionality can lead to weird power dynamics. No. I'm paying for dinner this time. I always have to make sure that I'm one up on you because I'm the bigger man, right? That's not a healthy power dynamic. Transactional relationships have this ongoing problem of, well, who starts, right? Because I'm waiting for you to pay first, then I'll reciprocate, and if I do, now you're obligated. No, this is just not healthy, right? And in fact, a lot of times I've had friends who would refuse to receive a gift because they didn't want to be obligated. They didn't want to owe me anything. And I'm like, it's a gift. You don't owe me anything. But here's the thing. If you refuse to receive a gift, that's not a relational thing to do. Some of my biggest regrets are times in my life when I did not accept something that someone wanted to give me. And I regret that to this day because it hurt our relationship. It was something where now I don't have that thing that would have reminded me of this particular time in my life. And it's not a humble thing to do. You don't accept it because, well, I don't need your charity, right? That's not humility. Jesus says, it's more blessed to give than to receive. Yes, absolutely. It does imply that it's at least somewhat blessed to receive. And also, who are you going to give to if no one will receive, okay? So we all have to like... And can I say this one other thing about transactional relationships? The accounting is exhausting. I just don't want to keep up with it, okay? Just please. I don't care that you paid for that and I paid for this and that's $3 more. Just don't worry about it. The thing is, if we share in God's great purpose, and I think we do, if we're all giving everything to the mission, who cares who's got the ball at the moment? I think I mixed my metaphors. But anyway, you get the point. You know, you don't look at the football team and say, well, he's got the ball, so he's important. We have to take turns. No, whoever's got the hot hands is going to get the ball, right? The point is to work together. So, but reciprocity is still important. We don't want transactional. We don't want to say, well, you gave me this, so I'm going to give you this. But there should be some sort of reciprocity. We should all be in the same team. Everyone has something to contribute. Maybe not at this exact moment, and that's okay. If you're here and you're like, I would give, but I'm in a crisis. I don't have anything. No, that's great. That's fine. That is okay. But you do have things inside you that at some point will be useful to the community. And at that time, that's great. Every body part, as we read, has a special and important function. Not all of those functions are used all of the time. Right? So in a community, the other interesting thing is that relational equity can go into the pool. When I say reciprocity, it doesn't mean that, well, you gave me this, and so I have to give you something. No, if you're contributing to the community in some way, it all kind of comes around. I am so happy when I help someone out, and then the next thing I see, they're helping someone else out. I'm like, oh, that's wonderful. That's exciting. That's good for us. That's good for us as a community, right? That's beautiful. It's kind of that pay forward idea, right? That's transactional is payback. Reciprocity is pay forward. Sometimes people will turn up every time they need something, and then they disappear, right? And look, that's okay. I'd rather you show up at all than not at all. And we're going to keep giving. Also, you're missing out. You're missing out on the love that you could be receiving. And we're missing out on your presence and unique talents. So, as I say to people all the time, when they come to my house, don't be a stranger. Community can be a wonderful and beautiful thing. And it can also be really messy. And if you want to just, Acts starts out so good, and then you can read all these different letters in the rest of the Bible that talk about, okay, guys, get it together, right? There are a lot of letters to the church that say things like, bear with one another. And boy, do I feel that. They had to navigate situations where people in the community were taking advantage of generosity and stirring up trouble. And so we have to recognize that while the thing that Jesus is inviting into is wonderful and beautiful, it's good for us, that it won't always be sunshines and roses. Dietrich Bonhoeffer, in his wonderful book, Life Together, one of the best books on community that I've ever read, it's short, you should look it up, talks about it's really important not to let the image we have of what community could be get in the way of what it is. This is what he said. Those who love their dream of a Christian community more than they love the Christian community itself will become destroyers of that Christian community. And that's something that I found is so hard for me to do personally, is to take the vision, the dream, the wish, and set it on the altar. Say, God, this is your church. This is your community. This is going to be what it's going to be. And you're going to pull in messy people that aren't going to have the social skills and that are going to have clashing personalities. And it's going to be beautiful, but only if I don't get in the way. So, community is important. It's beautiful. Non-transactional reciprocity is important, core fundamental principle. It's just the working out of what I see as grace and love, right? It's love because it's non-transactional. I don't give expecting to receive. It's reciprocal because it's grace. I give you the opportunity to give back when you're able. Okay. That's great, you say. But how? Thank you. Briefly, I'm just going to suggest, while the potatoes cook, they're almost done, I can feel it. I'm just going to suggest some practical ways to step by step get more involved in community. The first thing is to invite, because somebody's got to make the first move. Now, when Marissa and I started dating, it was Marissa. She asked me out, and I'm so glad she did, right? Because I would have been way too nervous. Somebody's got to take the first step, and so don't wait for someone else. Invite them to something simple. It could be coffee. It could be just a phone call. Inviting someone to a meal is a great thing. Jesus had so many meals with people. In fact, sometimes he invited himself over to their house. That's one of my favorite stories with Zacchaeus. He's like, hey, what are you doing up in that tree? Also, I'm going to your house. And so have someone over. It could just be for tea. But being the person to invite someone's got to get this thing kicked off, right? And then when you are with someone, practice appropriate levels of vulnerability. Now, we're not talking about oversharing the first time you meet with someone. You know, we've all been hurt in relationships. And honestly, some of that, not all of it, but some of it can be avoided if we're just cautious to take things one level at a time. To reveal a little bit more of ourselves every now and then and see what they reveal and find out what's safe and kind of negotiate that. But it is important to show some vulnerability. It's important to have needs, as I mentioned before. It's important to be able to be with people where they're at. Paul says in Romans, rejoice with those who rejoice and mourn with those who mourn. And let me tell you, you can't rejoice and you can't mourn unless you're willing to be a little bit vulnerable. So invite people in with appropriate levels of vulnerability and grow those relationships incrementally. Now, when you're spending time with people, especially in a mid-sized group, it's so important to make space for others. This is where that non-transactional exchange comes in, because it's important to take up space. Some of us have a hard time taking up the space. You have value. You are essential, and we need you to take up space. And some people have a hard time recognizing that they're taking up someone else's space, and they need to say a little bit less, right? So we want to have this rhythm where we take up space and then hand it to someone else. Some of the best people with best social skills that I've known are so good at like holding your attention and drawing you into a story and then turning it around. And they hand the ball off, right? And being able to ebb and flow is such an important skill. You want it from the Bible? Let me tell you what James says. It says, understand this, my dear brothers and sisters. Let every person be quick to listen, slow to speak. I'm going to say that again. Let every person be quick to listen, slow to speak. That's so important. And being able to be quick to listen requires genuine curiosity and humility. Those are pretty fundamental core character traits that Jesus wants to produce in us. And so even in a conversation, we think, well, we're just having a chat. It's not a big deal. That doesn't matter. That's an opportunity for Jesus to help develop humility and curiosity. It's pretty important stuff. So we want to cultivate those things so that we can make space for others, so that we can practice this non-transactional reciprocity in a small setting, right? This doesn't cost you very much. You just might have to not tell that story you're just dying to tell for the fourth time, right? It's okay. It's okay. It'll be your turn again at some point, right? But we also want to look at who is not taking up space, who's being quiet, and how can we invite them to the fore? And being married has been an amazing training for me in this, because Marissa will take up space. She has lots of great things to say. But also, sometimes people interrupt her, and then she just stops talking. And I've learned to know that, wait, she's been really quiet. Hey, what's she thinking? I bet you have something interesting to say. And she's been wanting to say, just hasn't been able to get it out because people are stepping on her toes, right? But there's always someone in a group like that. There's always someone who, if you just give them a minute, they've got something good. Or even if they don't have something good, sometimes it's just important to be heard, okay? Sometimes it's important to reflect before you jump in with your thing. Oh, I had that experience. No. You can talk about your experience in the moment, right? Oh, that is really hard. I just hate it when that happens. That must be really, really stressful for you. I remember when I was in that situation, it was really stressful for me, right? That's a different thing that, oh, my story's better, right? Again, I'm talking about basic social skills here, but it is so important, right? Oh, I can top that. No, you're not being curious, you're not being humble, right? Okay. So we're going to make space for others, then we're going to find a rhythm. One of the things that I talked about in my story was we got into this rhythm where we were seeing the same people four times a week, and we were having fun together, and we were praying together, and we were worshiping together, and we were serving together. And our lives kind of synced up. And sometimes you have to find some people to sync up your life with. Obviously, we can't all do it across the whole church. We got to find our kind of little group and sync up with some people that have like a compatible rhythm. But having that rhythm is important, because what we found is if you want to get to know someone, you can invite them to dinner, and that's wonderful. It's a great first step. And then, like, before you know it, 6 months go by, and you're like, do you want to get dinner again? Let me check the schedule, right? When you see someone who is showing reciprocity, right? When you see someone who they invite you over sometimes, and they invite you to do things, or maybe they don't have the ability to invite you over, but they bring something, they offer to help, they reach out, you say, wait, we're on the same wavelength. I'm inviting, but they're also inviting as well. That's something where it's something to explore. Hey, would you want to get together on a regular basis, every month, every Tuesday? We still do our Wednesday night fire pit, right? And it's wonderful because we get to see some of the same people over and over again. And the frequency is way more important to deepen the relationship than just about anything else you can do. You can have a wonderful, awesome, deep conversation, but it's the every week touch point that really helps you get closer to someone's life. And so find a rhythm. You make space for others. You practice this thing. You test out the waters. And then you say, hey, we're following Jesus in the same direction together. What if we just had a regular thing? What if we traded off? Maybe you come to my house 1 week and I go to your house the next week. Whatever works for you. Find that rhythm. And then we have to talk about things are going pretty good and then you hit a road bump, right? A little something goes wrong. And this is where we need grace in everything. There's a couple ways we can practically show grace. We're talking about but how, because we say grace all the time in church. And okay, but how do you show grace? Well, the first way is that you give people the most generous interpretation. You feel hurt by something, take a step back. Did they mean that? Could they possibly have any other reason to have slighted you in that way? Maybe they didn't see you. Maybe they didn't notice. Maybe they had something stressful going on. What is going on? Don't assume, right? Because we all tell stories. Something happens and we build a narrative around it. Well, they didn't like that I said this, and so they did this to get me back and blah, blah, blah. Check your story. Say, hey, I might have this all wrong. I kind of feel like this is what happened. Is that the case or not, right? Give people the opportunity instead of the number of relationships I've seen blown up over literally nothing. It's just a misunderstanding. It's just so sad. But then sometimes there are genuine values conflicts. Sometimes there's genuinely places where we're not on the same page, where people do hurt each other. We all have made mistakes. We've all hurt someone else. And at this point, we have to be willing to have the hard conversations to do the work of reconciliation. This is what Jesus says. He says, if you bring your gift to the altar, right? You come to worship. All right, God, I'm here for you. I'm going to give you all I have. And then you remember that your brother has something against you. Leave your gift there in front of the altar. Leave church. Go and be reconciled to your brother. And then come back and present your gift, right? He says, worshiping God's pretty important. I think we can all agree, pretty important. God says, if you got beef with someone, you take care of that first. I'll be here when you get back, okay? And I hate this part because I do not enjoy having hard conversations. I do not like hearing about how I've hurt someone, and I do not like telling someone how they've hurt me. I'd rather just pretend it didn't happen. But that's not what Jesus says to do. He says, do the work of reconciliation. Jesus has had the hard conversation with us. He came and died and came back to life and then said, I'm inviting you to do the same thing. Jesus is reconciling all things to himself. So we get to participate in that. We have grace. We do the work of reconciliation. You know, sometimes people are just difficult. It's not that they did anything to you. It's not that there's anything to reconcile per se. It's just some people rub me the wrong way. You know what I mean? You know what I'm talking about. You're like, I'm sure they're fine or whatever. They just drive me a little bit crazy. But something that's really cool is if you will pray for someone that you struggle with, God'll do crazy cool things. Someone who just always is a little bit too like insecure and always like coming up to you and bothering you at the worst possible moments. You pray for them. Oh God, would you? I see that you're showing me that they're just doing this out of insecurity, and I just want to ask that you would show them who they are in you, and that they would trust you. What do you know? The next week, they're fine. Oh, that's cool. I mentioned Dietrich Bonhoeffer before. He talks about the closest that we can get to one another is not in our direct relationship. It's through Jesus. What does he mean by this? He's talking about, well, we're filled with the Holy Spirit, right? You're filled with the Holy Spirit. It's the same Spirit. We're connected in a more deeper, more profound way through the Spirit than we could ever be face to face. And so when you're in a relationship with someone, when you have a relationship, praying for them is so much more effective because you're going the direct route. The closest we can get to each other is through Christ. And also, the closer to Christ we can get is through other people because we bring Christ with us wherever we go. Do you ever think about going somewhere and say, I'm representing Christ to this person, I'm bringing Christ into the situation? That's a really cool thing we get to do. And so we get to be Jesus to each other. We get to speak his words to each other. And then I'm going to wrap up on this. It's so important. Look for the people who are on the edges, on the outside. People who want to get in. We don't want cliques here. It's fine to have friends that are closer than others. That's fine. But we want to leave the door open. We want to open up the circle. Paul says in Romans, live in harmony with one another. Do not be haughty, but associate with the lowly. Do not be conceited. There's always someone who would love to be included. I've been that person so many times in my life. And I'm like, I don't need to take over. I just want to be hanging out. I'll be good, I promise, right? So we want to keep the open door. We get good moments in community. We feel so close to this group of people. And bring in someone new feels like it messes with the dynamic. But we can't hold on to those moments forever. Nothing is forever. It's too much pressure to put on relationships anyway. And we don't want to monopolize people. We don't want to monopolize a small group. So keep pulling up chairs. Look around and see someone who's like on the edge. And we have to ask Jesus to give us his eyes because so many times we'll look right over the person who needs us the most. And in fact, I encourage you to ask God to show you the value that he sees in others. Because sometimes people come in and they're broken and they're hurting and they have a lot of needs. God's put something really cool in them that's maybe hard to see. But if you call that out, that'll bring so much encouragement, so much joy to someone. There's so much power in being able to do that. So wherever you find yourself in the process, my encouragement is to simply take the next step. So we have a great opportunity to do that today. We have some soup. I do hope you will all stay. And my invitation to you is to invite someone to sit with you. It's pretty simple. Invite someone. And then when you have them next to you, practice giving space, taking up space. Giving space, taking up space. Practice curiosity, practice humility. And see what God does through that. Ask God to show you what you need to see, what you need to hear that you can encourage them in.